This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Okay, once again, we're joined by Dr. Richard Batty from the University of Manchester. Thank you for taking part in our April Fool, Richard, and welcome back.
Thank you.
We were talking about the launch of COBE and the first results from COBE, the Cosmic Background Explorer. It got launched in 1989 and the first results were in 1990. Can you tell us what happened in the subsequent years with COBE?
Well, we were expecting the results of the DMR experiment in 1992, and they duly arrived. And they measured the fluctuations in the cosmic microwave background temperature, and we found that the temperature anisotropies, as we call them, are 1 part in 10 to the 5, so 1 part in 100,000. And these fluctuations were measured by COBE on very, very large scales, about 7 degrees on the sky. So that's about 14 times the diameter of the Sun. And this has led to a lot of very interesting constraints on cosmological models.
So what were the constraints on the models?
So if you remember what I said before, there's these competing ideas between inflation and topological defects for the initial fluctuations of the universe. And there was this idea that we could constrain the matter content of the universe.
So just a quick reminder, inflation was this very quick period of expansion in the very beginning of the universe.
So inflation is a period of exponential expansion at the beginning of the universe, and this can lead via quantum mechanics to the formation of the seeds of galaxy formation. The idea of topological defects is that something rather dramatic happened in the early universe, and these topological defects were formed, and if they hung around for long enough, they could create fluctuations as they moved through the universe. In fact, the DMR results were not really able to rule in and out those models. But what it did do is it managed to show that some of the models for the dark matter of the universe were incorrect. So there was two ideas. One was called cold dark matter. So cold means its kinetic energy is less than its rest mass energy. It's equals mc squared energy. And the idea of hot dark matter which was made, for example, of neutrinos, hot dark matter is where its kinetic energy is larger than its rest mass energy.
Okay, so it's moving extremely quickly.
Yes. So a neutrino is something that travels close to the speed of light. And so the cold dark matter of the universe, it was the model that was shown to be correct, or something similar to the cold dark matter model was shown to be correct.
So you're saying COBE managed to rule out the hot dark matter?
Yeah, so when you compared the amplitude of fluctuations that were measured by COBE and those that had already been measured on much smaller scales in the distribution of galaxies, one found that the two were incompatible for hot dark matter. Whereas the cold dark matter model, well, the cold dark matter model didn't agree exactly either, and we'll come to that in a minute. But it was definitely much closer than the hot dark matter. It was really catastrophic for the hot dark matter model.
So the COBE results were fairly fundamental results. I think a Nobel Prize has been shared between the people who worked on that.
Yes.
Moving forward into the late 1990s, there were some measurements from supernova, I think, weren't there?
There were. So cosmological observations moved on. There were many more CMB measurements. People measured the galaxy distribution of the universe more, but they also started looking at supernovae, a particular kind of supernovae whose luminosity we believe we know, and essentially we can work out from the observed luminosity, we can measure how far away they actually are. And this allows us to understand things about the expansion history of the universe. And what we found was that the universe seemed to be actually, rather than slowing down, as I had predicted, it was actually accelerating. And this is a great surprise to everybody. And this led to the construction of a model which is now called Lambda CDM. And basically what it has in it, as well as the CDM, it has something...
That's the cold dark matter.
The cold dark matter. It has in it a cosmological constant. And this is an energy of the vacuum which drives the expansion of the universe in the absence of anything else there. And this is what leads to the acceleration.
Lambda was first predicted by Einstein, I think, didn't he?
He predicted, well, he didn't actually predict it in the way that we observe it, but he took his famous field equations, the Einstein equations, which are the equations that govern general relativity, and he added a constant to that in order to make the universe not expand.
Right.
But in fact, this was shown to be a very bad idea because the concept was unstable to perturbations. But it's something that had been hanging around then for quite some time afterwards as an idea, and had come in and out of fashion as cosmological observations improved. You know, sometimes people said they needed a lambda to explain their observations, sometimes they said they didn't. But finally we got to this point where the people measured the supernovae, and they concluded that the only way that they could explain what they saw was via this cosmological constant.
And then moving on from supernovae, there've been balloon-borne experiments, and yeah. Then we've moved again into space.
But there was some balloon-based and ground-based CMB experiments, and they started to measure the anisotropies of the cosmic microwave background on much smaller scales, and this allowed us actually to rule out the model of topological defects for the formation of the initial seeds of galaxy formation. And the subsequent observations seem to be very compatible with the inflationary paradigm for the formation of the initial fluctuations. So that, then there was WMAP.
So that's the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe?
That's right. So that was another satellite by NASA. And this was launched, I think it was 2001. And it has now been operational for nearly 9 years. And there's been some wonderfully precise and exciting results that have come out of that, and they've measured the anisotropies over a very wide range of scales over the whole sky. And this has allowed us to become very confident that these data are compatible with this lambda CDM model, and this is now the standard paradigm for how the universe looks.
And then moving into 2009, just last year, we had the launch of Planck.
Indeed. So Planck was launched, and Planck is another satellite mission, this time by ESA and the European Space Agency. It has been gathering data for about 7 months now, and so it's covered the sky once already, and it's going to cover it hopefully another three times, and it has even higher resolution than WMAP. And higher sensitivity, so it will in some sense be the ultimate measurement of the CMB temperature anisotropies of the universe, and hopefully it will allow us to constrain even further the model.
So a lot has happened in 20 years then.
For someone who works on these things every day, it sort of seems like things go very slowly, but looking back at it and thinking it in that way, an enormous amount of things have happened, and it's all been very exciting for everyone involved.
And just looking forward from 2010, what might you expect for cosmological research?
Well, that's a very difficult question. Well, hopefully they'll find something I worked on. I think that's a bit too optimistic. But the Planck results will be released in 2012, and we can expect there to be some very, very tight constraints at the very least on the models, and hopefully we'll discover something that we didn't really expect, and there'll be a new era of excitement in cosmology.
Right, well, thank you very much for talking to us, and the best of luck with your research in cosmology.
Thank you.